As you listen to these readings, these psalm passages that we've shared together this morning, and as Clark read this final one, Psalm 63, and those poignant words that began that thought of David, in this parched and weary land where there is no water. And it may be that this very moment, this very morning, this time in your life, that you find yourself in that place. That as you think about what's going on in your life, what's going on in the world around you, the challenges, the pressures that you face, that for this moment you listen to those words and you say, I'm there. And I don't know if there's a way out. I find myself in this parched and weary land, and somehow physically with all the rain that we've had this year, it may be hard to imagine that dryness, but David's there. And you may be too. It may be spiritually, and you may be in this auditorium, and nothing that we have done has meant anything to you. You've listened to individuals sing these songs. Nothing. You've listened to the words. Nothing. You've listened to the prayers, and there's nothing because you find yourself in that dry land. Some of you may be monetarily wondering what you will do tomorrow because the bill comes due. The need's there and the bank account's empty. You don't have any money. And that dryness, that land of destitute is there because monetarily you are without. Or maybe it's emotionally. And maybe you just feel dead inside. There's a darkness that pervades. So you listen to those words of a parched and weary land where there's no water, and you find yourself there. These aren't the early days of David when he is fleeing from Saul, and though there was trouble within that moment as Saul is out to take the life of David, it's kind of a heady time. Because David, for all of his imperfections, David is the premier general. He knows how to gather his troops, and he knows how to win a battle. And those days, even as he's running their heady days, he's got his band of brothers with him, and they've got their victories, and they sneak up on Saul a couple of times, and they've got those moments. This isn't that time as he's fleeing in the desert, in the dark, in the dry. This is later in life. This is old man. This is past the time of being able to run. It's an old man fleeing for his life, and he's fleeing for his life from his son, Absalom. Every parent has those moments when they struggle with the choices that their children make. And it's an ongoing struggle, and as long as you're a parent, that struggle never comes to an end. But you imagine the struggle that David finds himself in at this moment. It's not that Absalom's making some poor choices that are going to concern his later life as far as what he may do. Absalom is out to take the life of his father, David. And David's running as much as an old man can run. Parched and weary land. He's a fugitive from his own land, fleeing to the desert. I listened to Ryan as we prayed together. I listened to Garner as he talked about this church, and Ryan, as he talked about the community that we are as the body of believers, and Garner, as he talked about this body and his love for this body and this church. And the desire is that this place becomes a haven. Not a haven to remove ourselves from the world, but a haven to find rest and to find nurture. And to be able to move out into this world and to make a difference in this world because of what we have found here. That it is a place to be loved, a place to bring blessing. In reality, because it's got me in it and it's got you in it and it's filled with those of us that are people, the reality is that we fall short of that glory all too often. What the church is to be all about, growing and maturing in our personal worship, what we do, growing and maturing in our corporate worship, what we have shared together this morning, as we've listened to God talk to us, as we've listened to the things that go on in this body, as we've shared in the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, not just our personal worship, but our corporate worship. That this church is a loving family, and that our desire, one of our goals, is to strengthen each other as we are part of this family, and as we move together within this family, that we have that overarching desire that our life is being lived. Share the good news. We believe that. And that the good news that we believe, we want to share with others. A body of believers committed in worship to God, nurturing each other, and living lives that bring light in the darkness. When you find yourself traveling through this parched and weary land, because we'll be there. You've been there. And as you find yourself on that journey through a parched and weary land, painful circumstances, the tragedy of what goes on in this world, where do you turn? Where do you go? Why the wilderness? And when you think about it, and it's not necessarily a pleasant thought, but it is the reality of how God works within our lives, the wilderness puts things into perspective. It allows us to see in a way that we haven't always seen, because we find ourselves in the wilderness. And it puts the precious things of this world into perspective. I was in high school when I read The Hobbit, and then The Lord of the Rings. And so Gollum has always been a part of my literary memory. And if you've read the books or if you've seen the movie, well, you know Gollum's line, "My precious." And we look at that and we see that twisted and that warped figure and we think, not me, but is it? How much of this world becomes my precious? Am I any less enamored with the things of this world? And so when the dry and desert time appears, do I have the strength? Do I know where to go? You think of all the effort, all of the treasure that we put into making this world a paradise. And sadly, when I do that, I've often removed my need for God. But in that dry land, it's where I find God. The reality is, and you know this, you live it. But the reality is, we live in the nasty here and now. It's not paradise. We live in the here and now, and we need to realize that it's to God we turn. And that's where the strength is through it all. It's Wednesday afternoon, and I got a call, and my phone, as many of your phones do, and these young men that are able to read those phones, I'm still impressed. I can barely see the phone, let alone the words that might be on it, but their eyes still work, so they're able to do that. And my phone, like your phone, if you have the fancy new ones that we all seem to have, it tells you who's calling if it's somebody that's been in there. Well, of course, mine said Melinda. And I answer the phone, and I can't understand what she's saying because she is so distraught. Well, my mind instantly goes to what's happened to a child, what's happened to a grandchild. Because it's that level of weeping. As I'm finally able to understand what she's telling me. Back up just a moment. 50 years ago, over 50 years ago, I was 14. My mom and dad bought a little cabin on Center Hill Lake, so that's been a part of my life, all of my life, virtually. We're still there. Well, the call was that a neighbor that is very close to us, the last one that we would have expected, had taken her life. Couple had been married for 27 years. She found the darkness. In that 27 years, They'd spent 6 days apart. Pat and Melody, she went by Mel. And all of us that know them in that Center Hill Lake community where we have our little cabins, we know them as Pat and Mel because they were always together. Did not know, because to have the casual friendship we had with Mel, you wouldn't have known that she struggled with depression, that her father had taken his life at the age of 39. So what genetic component was a part of that, what drug component as she was changing from one antidepressant to another. No idea what triggered it at that moment. Unbelievable for us. And so that Wednesday, after we were together here, we went to spend some time with Pat. Just listen to him cry. Over and over again, to hear him say the words, "God gave me a mountain. I don't think I can do it. I don't think I can go on. He gave me a mountain. He gave me a mountain." You've been there with people. You struggled through those moments in this world of the here and now where if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. Sweet Mel, who every day would get up and read the Jesus Calling Day to her husband. They worked in construction around the area, helping all of us who weren't there all the time have places that didn't fall apart. Anything that Mel got, she had her envelope. And 10% was what she put in that envelope because it was God's. And you never know when the mind leaves and life becomes forfeit. We've talked a lot about that last year. And I'm grateful for the conversations that we've been able to have to encourage those that find themselves in the midst of that darkness. To know that even in that parched and weary land, there's a way out. We face a lot of pressure within this world. Pressure to find the right mate. Pressure to find a good job. Pressure to excel in athletics. Pressure to keep up with the Joneses. I'm not sure which Joneses had all the money that we always want to keep up with them, but they were out there somewhere, evidently. And now we're trying to keep up with them. Pressure to rear godly children. Pressure to help friends with their struggles. Pressure to, as you often hear in any of the pageants, bring about world peace. Well, we know. It's all out there. It's all a struggle. Where I turn for rescue when I find myself in the wilderness, it's crucial. And there was only one place for David. A place that transcended life itself. Your unfailing love is better than life itself. How I praise you. Right doctrine. Knowledge of the Bible. What we do as we gather together in our times of study. And I'm grateful for our efforts on Sunday mornings with 1 Corinthians, and we have an opportunity, a special ladies' class that's developed for Wednesday night and some other classes that'll take place. I'm grateful for all of those. They are times of learning. They are times of growth. But right doctrine and knowledge of the Bible, as important as they are, there is more. And that's an intimate and personal relationship with God, always desiring more of Him to satisfy my thirsty soul. And sometimes I've got to be in the desert before it becomes real that that's what I need, that that's what my life needs to be about. A.W. Tozer, in his often read book, The Pursuit of God: "The Bible is not an end in itself, but a means to bring men to an intimate and satisfying knowledge of God, that they may enter into Him, that they may delight in His presence, may taste and know the inner sweetness of the very God Himself in the core and center of their heart. I lie awake thinking of you meditating on you through the night, because you're my helper. I sing for you. I sing for joy in the shadow of your wings. I cling to you. Your strong right hand holds me securely. It's interesting, the early church developed a pattern. This was their morning hymn. And their pattern was that the 63rd Psalm would be sung every morning. I have no idea what tune they used. It was likely a chant. But I'd like to challenge you in this week, in the days that are in front of us, that this is your morning or afternoon or evening hymn. But the 63rd Psalm is read every day to remind us, yes, there is a dry and there is a parched, there is a weary land, but there's light. And until I desire Him more than anything in this earth, I fail to have the comfort that He provides. As we spent time with Pat that evening, as friends from the neighborhood spent time with him, as we spent time this weekend, little hope begins to come. A couple so loved that an individual who'd been a chef down at the restaurant at the dock, who now lives in Atlanta, she brought him food. As far as I know, she came from Atlanta just to bring him food. Another couple with whom they had worked, the wife is a psychiatrist, said, "I'm coming." I spent time with Pat. Because of our love for him, because of our love for Mel, and because of our understanding, sometimes the darkness overwhelms. Sometimes it takes over. And that's when I need, there's a way out. That's when I need to cling to that strong right hand. We sing as a moment of invitation, but an invitation that is always open, because there is a fountain filled with blood that washes clean. Rescue from the right hand of God as we stand and sing.